Thank you for joining us on today's episode of About the Face, and this is Dr. Peter Vila. I am extremely excited to be speaking with some major players in facial plastic surgery about a recent study that just came out in FPSAM called Tranexamic Acid and Retinectomy, a split-face multi-institutional study. To kick off the episode today, let's start with our first guest.
Manoj Abraham, I'm up here in the beautiful Hudson Valley in New York, and I've been in practice now for 20 plus years. So just to clarify, so oral TXA, and I come at 650 milligram tablets. So my regimen is two tablets three times a day, and there's a maximum dosage, you know, it's 3,900 milligrams per day. You don't want to exceed that. So I have them start that, a couple of days before, and then I have them continue that until they're finished. And like I said, I've been doing that for 15, 20 years, never had an issue using it in that fashion. A lot of people are giving it IV. And again, you know, if you're giving it intravenous, you would try to match something similar in terms of dosage. The part that I started to add in was combining it with the local. TXA comes in 100 milligrams per milliliter vial, and you want to ultimately dilute that down to 1 mg per mil. So you need to put that into 99 cc's of your local, and then you've got the right concentration. And so then you can inject that. And that's what I was doing, not only giving it orally, but I was also injecting it with my local for my facelifts. And then also right before closing, spraying it topically underneath the flap. So kind of multimodality therapy. And I did that for a number of years. I want to say two or three years, over 100 patients, obviously, during that time. And for the most part, didn't have any issues until I did have an issue. So 65-year-old, you know, kind of standard Caucasian facelift patient, heavy neck, no prior facial surgery, weight stable, you know, no major medical issues. This was during the height of COVID, and she had a COVID vaccination. So that's worthwhile kind of keeping in mind. You know, in general, for me, the contraindications for using TXA is any type of hypercoagulable state. So you have a history of DVT or your hormonal medications, you got a history of smoking in general. I'm not, you know, putting those patients on TXA. She didn't have any of those, but she did have a COVID vaccine, which may be an X factor. You know, routine, obviously I do a composite deep plane facelift, and you know, everything went perfectly during the case, no issues whatsoever. But then when I saw her post-op, I typically take the dressing off the next day, and you know, little bit of flap congestion that I was a little concerned about. I saw her back the next day just to check on her, and she had flap necrosis that was starting to demarcate in a very unusual pattern for hypoperfusion. You would expect hypoperfusion to be at the distal aspects of the flap, and this was not. This was like mid-flap in terms of the presentation. I'm talking about the cutaneous flap, obviously. And so, you know, you panic a little bit in that situation on a cosmetic patient. But then, you know, obviously you dive into all the things that, you know, we all know about. So topical nitro paste, you know, have a chew and aspirin, got her plugged into a hyperbaric, you know, center to the wound care center. I have a hyperbaric at my office as well, but it's not the same degree of pressurization that the wound care centers use. So set that up at the hospital, got her admitted, you know, got a workup on her to make sure she didn't have some sort of hypercoagulable disease that was contributing. All of that turned out to be negative. Obviously, you know, antibiotics and kind of the usual stuff.
Being very involved with the New York Facial Plastic Surgery Society, Dr. Abraham reached out to colleagues to see if others had had similar experiences with TXA.
I wanted to discuss this case. I thought it was really kind of an interesting situation. And so I was talking to my colleagues down in Manhattan, the city, and believe it or not, I wasn't the only one with that type of complication. You know, in fact, good friend of mine, good colleague, a much more severe presentation than the one that I was talking about, where that particular patient had just extensive necrosis of the flaps. You know, it was kind of eye-opening, again, in the context of using TXA. I had to take a pause on that. And then I really did want to figure out if this was kind of a one-off where few people were experiencing this, or was this really more prevalent? So I reached out to Babak and I said, look, you know, you guys have some cases. We're seeing some of these cases in New York. Maybe we should do a survey to see if this is, again, more prevalent than, you know, that what we're seeing. So we did the survey study, and I'll give you some of the highlights. It went out to 1,494 active AFPRS members, went out to 2,555 ASPS, you know, plastic surgeons. And this was between January 1, 2020 and January 30, 2022. We got a 10% response rate, so 381 respondents. And of those people who responded, there were 121 complications felt related to TXA use. And most of them, 117, were in longer flaps, longer than 2.5 centimeters. So, we're talking about facelifts and such. And the most common complication, as was my experience, was this flap necrosis in kind of an unusual pattern, mid-flap. So about 70% of the people who reported complications had, flap issues in that distribution. So the troubling part of this is that about a little bit more than a half of these patients subsequently went on to have scarring, as my patient did as well. But 26 of those patients, a little over 40%, had unmanageable scarring that was not able to be hidden or camouflaged easily. And again, we're talking about cosmetic patients, so that's a problem. And two of those cases ultimately went on to litigation, which is not great, obviously. And four people required prolonged therapy, such as anticoagulation. So again, not something you want to take lightly. Obviously, a tiny fraction, when you think about the response rate and then also of the respondents, it's only a small number, but still relatively catastrophic complications for cosmetic patients. So it gives you pause. And so then I reevaluated my TXA use. I actually had a second patient who got a small area necrosis in the submental area, again, not near the incision, kind of, further down, which also may have been related to TXA use. Sometimes, again, if they're really cranking on their compression garments, they can sometimes get a little skin breakdown, but this was more severe, I guess, than that presentation. So again, I reevaluated and I switched back to using just the oral, version of the TXA. And again, since I've not had an issue.
I asked Dr. Abraham to tell me about how the study came about.
So it's interesting because the primary author, I guess, on this project, Jacqueline Klimczak, was one of my residents at Sinai. And Shirley Hugh, who's also one of the co-authors, is a fellow resident. They were the same year. So Shirley went on to match with Steve Perkins and Mark Hamilton out in Indiana at their practice. And Jacqueline went on to match with Danny Russo in Alabama. And so Jacqueline and I had brainstormed this project many years ago because I had started to use TXA orally. There weren't necessarily a lot of split face studies. And so Jacqueline and I had talked about, okay, why don't we get going on this split face study where we'll, inject it on one side, we'll just put the local in on the other side. And I was also spraying it underneath the flap topically. So kind of a combination of different things. So we initiated this, split face blinded study to evaluate the degree of bruising. And then ultimately, when Jacqueline and Shirley got involved as well, and once they matched at their respective fellowships, we were like, well, let's make it multi-institutional because we're, getting good results. Obviously, the study is going to be more meaningful if we can recruit other surgeons to participate. And so both Jacqueline and Shirley became involved. And ultimately, they recruited, between the three institutions, myself, Steve, and Mark, and Danny. Jacqueline got 70 patients as part of that study. And I thought it was a really nice study that she put together where she showed that the amount of ecchymosis, the amount of bruising, was considerably less. Statistically significantly less on the side where the TXA was injected or applied, underneath the flaps.
So I'm Dr. Mark Hamilton. I'm a facial plastic surgeon in Indianapolis. So I have to give credit to where it's due. It's really to the fellow at the time, Shirley Hu, who really set this up, and her co-resident from New York. Those two really kind of got this going, set it up, and teed it up for us to do it in surgery. So it made it easy. Because otherwise, you're absolutely right. This would have been complicated. But they really made it easy for us. For us, it was just doing the surgery and then taking pictures a week later, a week pictures before and a week later. So it wasn't too hard for us. It was really credit to them for making this happen. As part of this podcast, I went back and looked at things. I mean, there are very good large studies on facelifts where they have demonstrated very good safety of TXA, less risk with the TXA in there than without it. I understand our facial plastic world, we're really concerned about TXA. I don't think the rest of the world is. And I'm trying to balance that in my mind, what's right and what's not. I've never had a problem with TXA that I could attribute to TXA. And I've used it before in all three manners, in the IV, in the local, and topically. And I don't have a patient where I've thought, wow, that TXA must have caused something, a problem there. So in terms of going back to the TXA, the things that I've seen with it, the study talked about bruising, and I think that's true. There's less bleeding during the case. There's no doubt about it in my mind. I can do a facelift faster than I could 5, 10 years ago because of TXA. There is, I think, less bruising right away off the bat. The case is faster. In our study, that was noticeable in our, at least in our practice, that the TXI was definitely faster because there was less bleeding, less bruising afterwards, not just at a week, but all along. You know, we all have our patients where, whether it's a patient with a smoking history or just flaps don't look as good as you would hope, or issues behind the ear. I think we all occasionally see that, but I wouldn't attribute that to TXA. In those patients, I usually could say there's maybe a little too much tension there, or maybe the flap is a little too thin there, that sort of thing. All these other people are seeing issues. I actually took it out of my local in the last several months, but I have never seen anything. And then as part of this podcast is looking at some of these other studies, I'm probably going to put it back in.
I sought out input from another surgeon not involved with the study.
Babak Azizadeh, and I'm in Beverly Hills, California, facial plastic surgery. One of the things I loved about this paper was the multi-institutional collaborative project in aesthetic procedure. It's very rare. You don't see it. You see it a lot with cancer. You see it a lot in other, you know, medical. So what I loved about this paper, and I'm really happy it was published in FBSAM, was we got multi-institutional collaboration amongst people that everyone, I think, in our field trusts. They're very reputable. They're educators as well as just leaders in our field. And it was really, really nice to see that. This was what, 70 to 80 patients, I think 79 patients in this study, if I remember correctly. It's phenomenal. It's fantastic. I would say we need more studies looking at complications. I think to get to complications, I think we need probably a lot more patients. It could be even retrospective, 300 patients in a single surgeon. But also don't forget, we also need to know it's not just TXA. It's what dosage. What's the mixture? Is it in a combination with IV TXA or not? So all of these things have not been worked out yet. I think those are the things that I would love to see. And I think facial plastic surgery with a volume of facelifts that we are doing as a group, FPSAM under the leadership of Travis and people like you, Peter, that are really putting out great information. I think we have a very, very, very strong, we're in a strong position to really kind of answer questions like this, not just TXA, but other questions because of the volume that we're doing and the collaborative nature. For me, it's going to be okay. Let's say on 50 patients, we save some time, we save some ecchymosis and so forth. I'm still not personally at a position where I would say that the skin-related issues, and maybe again, it may have been the way I was injecting it. Maybe it was our approach that still weighs on me a little bit. So, but I'm more likely to now with this new study to go back to using it in my tumescent solution because I think we have better evidence as an incoming president of a society, right? The society, I think, plays a very, very critical role in helping our members, you know, navigate the field, education, getting the most advanced up-to-date information so that they can make a decision of whether this is something they want to do or not. From my perspective, I think as a president or as a board, I think the clinical judgments and guidelines, there's certain things like, for example, just the analogy, like Bell's palsy with the AAO. AAO has guidelines, right? And I think those guidelines are really, really important because for a long time, people were being hurt by not getting the appropriate treatments. And I think we needed to put that guideline, not just for otolaryngologists, but for emergency medicine and primary care doctors so that they could have. So there are circumstances where I think this society needs to like take a major lead in patient advocacy. TXA, whether that falls into that really critical patient need and advocacy, I don't know if it falls into that. I think it more likely falls into doctor preference of what they want to do and how they want to do it. Just like, you know, some people do general anesthesia, others use TEVA and sedation. I think a lot of those things, one may say that, oh, TEVA is better than general anesthesia, or one may say, no, general anesthesia is better because you can have better airway control. So a lot of these subtleties of practice, I don't think societies should get too involved, because then if there is something that happens, let's say someone doesn't use TXA and then has a major hematoma, cervical facial hematoma, they have airway compromise and something happens, then the consumer may say, hey, this doctor didn't use TXA. I got a major hematoma. This is a standard that your society uses. So we have to be a little careful with that. Whereas a Bell's palsy example, like we talked about, that's a very, very important outcomes. And yeah, if someone doesn't use it, I think it does impact outcomes negatively. And that should be very, very critical in terms of what the AAO has decided is an important role. I still think like the art of practicing medicine, surgery, facial plastic surgery is in your own personal experience, plus the education that you get, right? And the education and reading the literature. Really, what you're asking is this the standard of care yet or not? I don't think we have that evidence yet. I think it may be close. Maybe we're 2, 3, 4 more studies away from saying, look, this should be standard of care. I don't think we have thousands of patients yet. And there have been, I think the Aesthetic Surgery Journal, they published something that was more of a larger review of the existing literature. But I would say read the paper. I always tell people this. It's just like kind of SMAS versus deep plane. Is the deep plane facelift standard of care? No, it's not. Is it a great surgery? Absolutely. For some surgeons, I think the results are spectacular, but it's not the standard of care, in my opinion. I think it is an amazing technique, but people have to see what they're comfortable with, what the risk profile is, read the literature, and determine what it is. I think when we get to the standard of care, then it's something that I would say, look, this is the standard of care. I'll give you another really great example is facial nerve monitoring. You know, we haven't published anything on it. It takes thousands of patients probably to determine whether monitoring for facelift will improve facial nerve outcomes. So is it standard of care? No. If someone asks me, should I use it? I'd probably say there's no literature on it. I use it. You should, you know, look at your own level. So it's a complicated question, but I think definitely it should be looked at and people should see if this is a big part of, you know, if they feel comfortable. Absolutely. I think there's enough evidence that you could use it and be pretty safe.
We'd like to thank the authors for their commentary and thank you for listening to our podcast. If you'd like to explore more, please feel free to check out the article in print at the Facial Plastic Surgery and Aesthetic Medicine Journal or online. We'll catch you on the next one.